Okay, well, it's 1 o'clock, so I'll call the meeting to order. Roll call, everybody is here. We have seven commissioners. Please join me for a pledge of allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Georgia, were you counting? I thought I heard six.
Oh, no, I put the date. Oh. Sorry, I put the date on the recording.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So this is the December 6th Planning Commission meeting. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from our last meeting.
I make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Sorry. Any other discussion? Any comments? Then all in favor?
Aye.
I have to abstain. I was not here.
Okay. Thank you. So the next issue has to do with discuss and possibly vote on a recommendation to the town commissioners for the town's 2014 annual comprehensive plan progress update. This is required by the state. To my understanding, it is used more by the state than by the town. To see how all the municipalities are making progress against their comp plan. I guess there are copies of this stuff in the back of the room if anybody needs a copy. The issue is that we're dealing with is not recommendations regarding the plan, although if there are things we think we want to make recommend that we could do that, but progress against the plan. So this is two parts. What I distributed to all of you before were what was submitted a year ago. And this is required in June, and so we get the process going the end of the year, and then the commissioners deal with it in the early part of the year. And so the cover page form, we need the date of the report, and we need to amend the make some corrections in the composition of the Planning Commission members. Is there anything else that people want to suggest doing with this one? I mean, basically it says see the attachment, and the attachment is...
The attachment has been changed.
Okay, so we're good with that. I can tell by the nodding heads.
We're okay.
And so now we have the attachment, and I guess we could... There are two ways to do this, but we could go around the room and we can either go around the room or we can go, you know, item by item. And I don't care how.
Let's see. Last year, what we did is, well, we probably went through item by item and made an update where we had some accomplishment or something. We wrote that down.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing right now. So. Mike, do you want to, yeah. Mike Harmer, is there anything that you think we should change, or?
I want to discuss them because I'm not quite sure, okay? I'll tell you my observation and then you guys set me straight because, you know, I might be missing something. But if you look at page two, under housing, and keep in mind we have the straw man white paper or whatever it is for the
fourth
thing.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure if you want to take the top, the first one that says attempt to identify and define the architectural character of the community, comma, including that of the character of neighborhoods or sections of the community. And the C, it's marked C, complete, and then this year we kind of took an initiative to, you know, look at that. So I don't know if I don't want to take us backwards if we don't need to go backwards and put a U, you know, underway or not. So that would apply if we said that the white paper applied, then that would take us backwards from C to U there, and then the bottom one on that same page, utilizes zoning authority to carefully and appropriately shape the residential development of Dewey Beach, in particular township identify and protect areas of traditional small-scale residential development, encourage new mixed-use development. Not sure if it applies, David. I'm not trying to make it complicated. You know what I'm saying?
I had the same feeling that you had on the first one. I mean, I could see, you know, I hate moving backwards, but this should be, I think, a fair representation. And the feeling when this was filled out the first time, I think, was we did the comp plan, so we're good to go on this.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're more sophisticated in the way we think about these things.
Can we put two X's down below C?
I think it would be the top one. We'd just go from it instead of a C and X in the C column, just put it under U. And
people
I did
okay
see
with
some
that?
Areas where there's two X's. I don't know why we got two X's.
And I would add to the text something like we are working on a neighborhood character documentation for the NR district.
Perfect. Yes. I think that would be great.
And the thing at the bottom, I mean, I could be happy moving that back to you as well.
I have the same notation that I thought it needed to be moved back.
Yeah. Okay. So okay. That was the first one.
And since we're on that page, I had the same feeling for the second item, encourage residential development that is similar in architectural character, adding that we're reviewing the NR district zoning to protect the character of the district.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's... I think we learned that maybe we're not as good as we wanted, and okay, that's good.
If I have the floor, I'll just jump to my next page, which would be page 4.
Can we start at page 3?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so let's do
okay.
that. Okay.
Page
3.
Might
be easier to just go
sure.
to page.
Sure, sure, sure.
The second item, analyze its existing land use.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt that should be a one goal.
Okay, you want that to be C and ongoing, or you want that to be incomplete and ongoing?
Ongoing.
Huh?
The letter O.
Okay.
Well, because we are looking at the Rodney Avenue, that's kind of an... And that's going on right now with a plus review.
Okay.
That's all I had over for it.
All right, moving on to 4. I actually didn't have any. I don't have any for anyone else.
No.
Did anybody have anything on the first page? No. Okay.
No.
Page 4. I have one on page 4. The bottom item. Consider conducting a comprehensive mobility-friendly assessment of its transportation infrastructure. And that was underway. And it seems to me that that was based on a, where's Dale Cook when you need him, based on some kind of infrastructure plan that was put together in 2007 or something. You never get funded, and I don't know if anybody could find it. I'd be inclined to put that back to N, just because I don't think we're doing anything. I see a lot of people.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes, good. Thanks.
Page 5.
Page 5, the only thing I had was the first heading under plan recommendations. And I didn't know if we wanted to include in here where it says plan work well during Hurricane Irene, whether we wanted to include
sure.
Sandy.
I'm sorry, yeah, add Sandy. I think that did work well. Page 6.
At the bottom, you got two. Bottom six, you got two X's. I'm trying to go back and look at what C and O mean again.
C's complete and O is ongoing. The feeling always was, you know, some of these things you reach the goal and that's it.
Yeah.
And others you continue to, you know, review the issue.
Even though you reach one goal, you've still got another goal.
Or you just want to make sure that you're as good as you can be.
I figured that's what they were doing there, so I think I'm good with the way it's proposed. So.
Okay.
Can I go back to page 5?
No.
The bottom of page 5, it says, review providing public restrooms and Baywalk paths. And I think we've made significant progress there in the sense of... The situation with Ruttertown and you know, they reduced have a public facility today, bathrooms today, and we've got a plan. We've got a Baywalk that has a, if I'm not mistaken, it has a, an escrowed account or a sort of a guaranteed build fund.
Well, that's kind of already listed in that, the last part of that paragraph.
Yeah, it says it's included in Rudder Town negotiations, but there's no negotiation today. I think it's status. I mean, Jim probably knows this better than I do, but what is Mark Applebaum's final current situation regarding restrooms? It is that there's restrooms open. They might be transferred in the future somewhere else. They're kind of in the cove in the Crabbers Cove, kind of in the back there.
So you would like to.
The law specifies that they have to have public restrooms, and they do. Now, it doesn't designate exactly where they are.
No, but what we should do is take credit for that. This shows up as a underway, but it's really an accomplishment.
Well, we could put down, we could change it and put it down that it's been agreed upon.
So what if we were to put an X in under U and an X under C and annotate for that second item under the dash, public restrooms and limited Baywalk included in Rudder Town agreement.
Yeah, agreement. Right.
And the restrooms are open and the Baywalk is, Baywalk funding is escrowed.
Something like that, whatever the status is. And we, it's part of the second phase construction. And it will be completed in 2015, or can we say
I can't give you an exact time, but
they
were hoping to have it done by next year.
Okay.
And I think the public restrooms is not only public restrooms there, but I mean, what do we do with
that's right.
The
and
rest
that's why
of
the underway would be good too. But I did want to show some progress because there is definitely progress there.
Okay. Georgia, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to indicate that what they're doing right now only goes to connect from the existing Hyatt to the Lighthouse building. I think the restrooms, from the research I was doing for work I was doing for Story, I think the restrooms are in the final part that won't be beginning until next year.
Yeah, but there are public restrooms today that are open today. They're accessible today, and so it is an accomplishment.
But actually, not like today. In season, they are, because when the cove is closed,
they're closed.
Like I guess with the lighthouse being open, they have access to something.
You would think, yeah.
I mean, I think there's some signage that's needed, and there's some things that need to be done.
Yeah, I never even knew there was public restrooms there. I mean, no one's ever.
Yeah, there's no signs, and it's maybe that's the underway part of the.
Actually, I think there are signs when you're standing right in front of it.
Up close. Well, nothing to lead you to.
Maybe we can put a flashing sign on Route 1 if it's a public restaurant.
Okay.
I
think we got it.
We got it.
Right. Yeah, so two X's, and we take some credit.
Yeah. There's a number of things that have happened in the agreement this last year that maybe are not only in this place, but one or two other places. We have to talk about that.
Okay. So page 7. Page 8. So page 8 is one of those funny things that the economic development was kind of incorporated as a draft portion of the comp plan, but not an official portion of the comp plan. But we report progress against those goals and objectives anyway. Page 9. I had one, the first one under draft recommendations to move that X to the right. Provide training tools to building officials, police officers, lifeguards, and administrative staff. And I feel like, I guess I was given the impression from the town manager that that's all pretty standard operating procedure now.
You know, I would check that. That's ongoing training.
Well,
is ongoing.
I was going to put a C that we have a policy manual, we have the lifeguard manual, we have all these manuals, employees manual, and we're doing ongoing. So it would be a C, and it would be an ongoing.
Yes. Okay.
Page 10. Page 11. So I would amend, I propose to amend the last bullet in the under positive accomplishments to delete the end of that. It says positive budget results in FY13, and I would delete and trending positive in FY14. And I would add a couple of bullets. One is a positive budget results in FY14. One is adopted update flood damage reduction code, which I think is, I hope is not premature. I mean, they haven't done it today, but they have to do it by March 15th, you would think. So I think we can put that in. And also substantial increase in home renovation and sales 2013 to 2014. And I think that shows positive positive development trend. Comments?
Well, I was going to say, if this is going to be passed and sent to the commissioners, we really ought to qualify. Qualify that the Planning Commission has recommended and proposed the adoption of the new standards to the commissioners, because God only knows what, you know, we assume that it'll pass by March, but and maybe the assumption is we will be ready to pass by March, before March 16th.
Okay.
So a lot of these bullets will be modified or changed? I don't know.
If only if you speak up.
Okay. Well, okay. It says Director of Finance, but it says part-time. So this is accommodating the new...
This is Mary... Donahue? Dunleavy? What's Mary's?
Mary Dunmire.
Dunmire. Yes.
Yeah,
this is the part-time town manager, right?
And the Mayor Avenue project, I mean, that was completed in 2013 or 14, but probably we didn't do anything other than maintain it. I mean,
well,
maintain an oversight or something like that. But,
I'd say operation of maybe.
Well, this is positive accomplishments and trends and conditions as opposed to...
Well, successful continued operation of the Bay Area Avenue project or something like that. That would be good. That would change it.
Well, I don't think you... Yeah. So I guess the question is this incremental or cumulative? And I see this as cumulative. As opposed to what just got done this year.
Oh, I'm looking at that way, huh?
I mean, if you want to do this incrementally, then I think we would want to cross out a lot of
this. I agree. If you want to do it incrementally, you cross out this.
But I mean, my preference would be to do it cumulatively, because that's what we've done the last couple of
months. Well, maybe we can show it as...
I can put continued successful operation.
Yeah, I don't want to do, this has been accomplished, or, prior, and then this future doesn't... Significant accomplishments, trends, or conditions, it's the annual update, so it's the update. I would say that it has to be incremental, it should be incremental if it's an update. But we don't want to lose track of the things that we've done. I mean, but if you gave the reader an option to read what's been done versus what's been done this year or done in the update.
I assume that one will only have this document and one will not have the annual updates. And so this goes from 2007 to today.
Well, maybe we need to say that in here somewhere.
I will say that.
That's good. Sounds good.
Since passage of the plan.
Yeah, I mean that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to say that this is the block of things that have been done previously. This is the annually. This is in 2014. What's been done.
Yeah,
you have three things,
and I would prefer to do it just a single list cumulative, you all.
I think you're doing fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that clarifies it. Then it's we don't get the criticism that, damn, you reported the same thing five times every year. You report the same damn thing. Well, that's So that the idea that it goes back to 2007 is a good phrase.
Good. Page 12. Other than I need to reformat some of this, but Jim.
It's not significant. I was going to comment that we are looking at the Reed Avenue flooding issue. The town did approve the duck bills to go in. I don't know if that's a significant issue or not, but it's sort of like we want to see whether this is going to help mitigate some of the flooding that goes on in that area.
This is on under item two?
It's under, yes, under positive accomplishments, trends. I don't know whether it even warrants that, but it hit me. We are still looking at it, and I don't know if that's a positive. We're trying to come up with something.
It's been approved, but nothing's been done on it yet.
Well, we were waiting for the duck bills to come in.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be something for after we see if anything. I'm just
throwing it up. Yeah, okay. I don't know if that.
Let's see if anything ever. Let's see if that was possible.
It could be a negative trend. I don't know.
Maybe
planning issues and changes for which state help is required. I mean, I don't think anything's really changed there that I'm aware of.
Do you want to say something about Denrec and the flood mitigation? Do we say that? I mean, you've been interacting with the Denrec contractor on our draft.
Well, that's under I'm qualifying the bullet I wanted to add about adopting updated flood damage reduction code. I'll put something in there about worked with FEMA, with DENREC on this. And
this does seem like a remediation thing rather than accomplishments. In other words, where the state might be remiss in not doing something rather than DENREC is really an accomplishment. I mean, in the sense of
I put that in under item two on the previous page.
Okay,
the accomplishment. It's not a public hearing on this, but if the public has any comments, we're certainly okay. I would entertain a motion to make these changes and forward this to the town commissioners with our recommendation.
So moved. Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
I believe that's unanimous. Any opposition? So the next item on the agenda is to discuss how to deal with the conflict between the town's height standard in the zoning code, chapter 185, which says you can't go higher than 35 feet above grade, and the FEMA requirements for existing buildings if substantially damaged to be elevated to FEMA plus the town's mandatory freeboard. We have some houses that we believe would exceed 35 feet if that were true, and so how do we deal with that issue? And also with dealing with the issue of, I think we would like to increase freeboard to improve the safety of new construction in the face of sea level rise. But we haven't done that because we don't want to squeeze down the available building envelope for people. And so we have talked about what to do with the height. If somebody's house is substantially damaged, they have to build FEMA's, elevate to the FEMA plus mandatory freeboard standard, may go over 35 feet. And so what do we do? And I would like to get guidance from you all today that I could use to put together a draft ordinance for our next meeting, if that's not overambitious.
Well, I would like to propose that we recommend maybe a couple of options similar to the options that we discussed at the workshop. But I would really propose that we take base flood elevation in flood areas and use that as the base level measurement for our 35 feet in all floodplain areas.
So,
and that's part one. Part two would be is for those that are not in the flood zone area, that we maintain the existing 35 foot level measurement from the center street, which is really what we've got on the books right now, and that anytime the flood level changes, that the measurements continue within any flood area now and in the future.
So when you say base flood elevation, are you talking about the FEMA's BFE, or are you talking about the FEMA plus the town's mandatory freeboard?
Both, that one. FEMA and the mandatory freeboard as established by the town.
If I'm hearing correctly, David, Mike Harmer, I think that you're recommending, you're talking about option one.
That would be recommended
one.
Option
from yes.
the planning commission.
Right. So it'd be, but add to that the area that's not, that FEMA's not affected, you know, as you know, Jim's like proposed.
It would do nothing with the areas that are yeah. not in flood zones.
And that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
That's the part two.
Yep.
As a shorter term addition to that, should we consider letting the Board of Adjustment deal with, say, a place burns down tomorrow?
I don't support that. I heard her talking about it, and I don't have the power. You know, it's up to the commissioners ultimately, but I would not recommend that myself because I think it's just what the town manager was talking about. If something happens January 25th, and they enact it January 15th, Board of Adjustment, now you've got these people in a quagmire at the Board of Adjustment. And who knows what they're going to do? I mean, you know, you can't be guaranteed that they're going to show that there's a hardship case in their mind and vote that way. So I'm saying what Jim just proposed to me is what I support. Whether it goes down the road and gets approved, you know, I don't have the power. It's a great democratic process, but I'm going to support exactly what Jim just talked about.
Now, I
35, 32,
well,
I can
well,
negotiate
well, let's, let's. Yeah, let's focus more maybe on the model and then about the details. I think it's quite likely that because this changes how height is measured, it automatically triggers Ordinance 682. Which you either need a referendum or unanimous vote by the town commissioners to change how height is measured. You need one or the other.
Does it necessarily trigger this?
No, I don't think so.
The height is still 35 feet or less.
It's just all we're saying is where we take the measurement from.
Who's got a copy of
it?
The ordinance says it says the height or how the height is measured.
I don't think it says where it's measured from. It just says the height.
Well, it says the height. Who's got a copy of the?
Well, I do.
You just have it here. Where it disappeared.
I don't
know where my work
folder, right?
We have one.
The ordinance.
I got it right here. So what does it say?
Down at the bottom, probably.
The allowable height of a building within the town zoning code shall not be increased beyond 35 feet. And no modification of the manner of measuring the height of a building.
Where is it in code that it says it's
yes,
measured
right.
from the center line in the street?
Well, it's measured from grade.
Actually, there is no code. Bill found it. Bill Mears found it for me. So that's
the
where we measure it.
From the crown of the road
yeah.
in front of the house. That's where it's, but that is in code?
He found an area, and I recall him showing it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think the answer to the question is that, yes, it impacts a modification of
measurement. So we can make this recommendation I mean, if we had been properly noticed and had a public hearing, things, we could make this recommendation today. The commissioners could have their public hearing and meeting and enact this. No, they couldn't. They can't do anything. Their hands are tied by 682. They would have to repeal 682.
Okay, so
unanimously, they could do that.
Well, they could.
Two ways of doing that.
And they have two ways.
One is by unanimous, and the other is by referendum.
Right.
So, from our standpoint, wouldn't it be better to recommend that they consider sending it out to a referendum then, or something to that effect?
But I think it's incumbent upon us to provide them a recommendation for amending the code in some appropriate manner that we think is the best way for them to proceed, and then they have to go ahead and do that.
And point out they've got two options. They can do it individually from their standpoint, which I doubt that they would do it that way, but you never know. Or we could take the position to recommend that it go to a referendum, have the public decide how they want to approach it.
Right. But then there's the issue from today until whenever, if it goes to referendum, it's going to be September,
right.
Get the referendum results, have a town commissioner hearing and meeting in October. So this isn't going to be resolved until a year from now.
Okay.
If it's a referendum.
Right.
And if,
so what do we do in the interim?
So I mean, Don's point is, what do we do in the interim? And I'd like to, first of all, decide what the long-term strategy is and then talk about the short-term strategy.
Well,
I'd like to make it regardless of what we do, we need a long-term and a short-term.
Right.
So let's talk about the long-term. Okay. I mean, is everybody here pretty much on board with this notion of in a flood zone, commercial and residential, you take the 0 point measurement at FEMA plus the mandatory freeboard, and we then define some height from that point?
Yes.
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 Well, there ought to be some give by the property owners. In other words, if the property owner has a 35-foot building and he's got to go up 5 feet, really he... You know, the requirement is that he gives up 3 feet. The town's going to give him 3 feet, and he's got to give up 3 feet. In other words, he can build the 32 feet above the required lift off the ground, but he can't build to the 35 feet. In other words, he can't poke. You know, so he's going to poke through the 35 foot by 1 or 2 feet, but he's given up. The town's given him 2 feet, and he's given the town 2 feet because he can only build.
Marty, I wouldn't agree with that, because I think it's going to cause, should that person have flood damage, substantial flood damage on the first floor, and then in order to repair it, he's got to elevate the house, which means he's going to have to come up with something out of his pocket to do that. Now we're going to make him tear off part of the roof to increase his damage to the house. That's an increased hardship we would be creating for somebody.
You think, well,
if it's financial,
but it's an increased hardship. Whether it may not meet the qualifier of, technically anything could be considered an economic hardship.
Like 50% damages. I mean, if the 50% damage is the roof line or whatever, then he's got to build that anyhow. I mean, that's part of the process. But you're believing that it's just jacking it up and putting blocks underneath. I mean, that could be...
My point is, I would just say, I think they should be able to build it to the 35 feet if they choose to do that. That's the way
What I'm looking at is that the town is giving the property owner something. They're going to give them 3 feet. But the property owner needs to give the town something. They need to give 2 feet from 35.
Why?
Because they're in a part of the town that's viable to flooding, and it's not a maintained property. I mean, it's part of the strategic retreat process of saying, you know, you can't continue to build when a property is stressed by, you know, these flooding events.
Marty, excuse me, the example that we looked at this morning of Cajun Cove. They've got nothing to give back. They're at 35 feet with a flat roof.
Surf club, same thing. They're 38 feet.
Yeah, but if it gets burned down, let's say it gets completely burned down, and they're going to rebuild again, and they're going to get the 4 feet off the ground, and they're going to rebuild. My argument is that their building envelope is going to be 32 feet because the town's going to give them 2 feet above the grade, and they're going to give the town 2 feet of building.
It's almost their top floor.
They don't.
Now they've lost their top floor.
What do they have down at Bethany? They have 32-foot limit, and they got three-story buildings down there. So,
but we've got there's existing buildings in our town that, like the surf club, has three stories. What your proposal would do is cut off their top story, and that would put half one third of their owners out. They wouldn't even own a condo anymore.
Well, no, I think people are building three floors in 32 feet. And I don't know, but
I guess I feel that it depends on whether you're talking about apples or oranges. They both go into the smoothie, but if somebody has substantial damage and they have to continue to occupy, they have to elevate. I don't understand why they should have to compromise. Because of an act of God, act of nature, but so I probably would think differently about somebody who wants to tear something down and then build new. Now I know, Chuck, that you feel to say I'm going to let you broach 35 feet, but you've got to give something back in terms of your building envelope. That you feel that's a taking because we've always had a 35.
I don't feel it's a taking, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you really have to have two separations here, just like we have a separation of what's in the flood zone and what's not. I think you got to have a separation of what is damaged or destroyed as opposed to what is new building, new construction. And I really think that if we get to talk about new construction, I think we ought to stick with 32 feet for the building envelope and not even recommend 35 for the building envelope because I think that would be received a little better by the public. Saying we're dropping that building height, we're changing where we're measuring from, but we're dropping the height.
So
I think we need a couple.
So what do we do with the third category? Which is substantial improvement. Which is a voluntary.
Well, that's voluntary.
So you would put that in new construction?
I would put that under new construction. Simply because I don't think you can. I see the problem with not putting it under the stuff of substantial damage. But that's just a decision you make yourself.
You know, it's not like Sandy came through and you got trashed and I didn't, and you have to rebuild.
It's just I decided to substantially rebuild my building.
Yeah.
And I better make plans accordingly, I guess.
Others?
I'm having a hard time make my mind, because what I see happening, at least in my mind, is it's a hard line we're trying to establish to recommend good planning and zoning for future improvements of somebody's property, but we're also bringing in property value and hardships and things like that, and it's got to be a good balance with the planning committee. I know we have to recognize it's a small town and there's individual properties that we all know about that could be affected, but we also have to be careful that we're not opening up too many doors that could change the character of what the founders of the towns really wanted as far as the height limit. See what I'm saying?
Sure. And I see us as trying to find a solution for 80% of the people.
Right.
So that we reduce the load to the Board of Adjustment if that's the mechanism for a hardship appeal.
Well, I'm not too concerned about reducing the load for the Board of Adjustment. Well, that's another topic. But
I just see it if
I keep going back to the process that must have took place before I was involved in town about the 35-foot height and how much emotions were put into it and why, and of course I didn't understand flood levels and things like that, and I just have a feeling somehow we should honor that emotions and thoughts that everybody put in back then as to what the character of the town should look like. They don't want to look like Ocean City or places like that. But how do we do that to be, fair or to be, acknowledging that it could cause a tremendous hardship to somebody? But I think as a planning commission, we have to be careful we don't go into, that area too far, because I don't think it's really our position to, I don't be so cold to say worry about them. But our main job is to set the baseline, so to speak, or the character of what we think the town is and continue through. Now, that's a lot of marble jargon, I know. So I just think whatever we vote on, we should really, be careful we're not going to open up too many doors for buildings that would be so high that would probably go out of the character of what people want Dewey to look like.
And you can certainly get to that possibility when you're down at the Bayside.
You could.
Which is going to become a VE7 zone, with an elevation of the street, as one foot. And so now they can go to an elevation of 35 plus 1, 36 is where the roof is. In the future, their lowest floor level is going to be VE7 is 7 plus the floor joist is 8 plus the freeboard of 3 that we would like for DE zone is 11, and 32 is 43 feet versus 36 feet.
I am open to still, what I'm going to do or how I would recommend doing, but I just want to make sure that, you understand what could possibly happen down on the bay, what
you're going to have this
look like. And that's fine if we all decide if it goes that way, it goes that way.
Well, the interesting thing is we've got it right now, but at a lower level.
Yeah.
All different. We've got,
you've got one story, cottages,
and 3 stories.
I just
don't see how you can solve this.
Well, one of giving, the property owner gives back some of the building envelope is what I suggested. In other words, I think we're talking about two things. One is maintain the 35-foot building envelope and go right up, whatever it takes. So you got a 45-foot building, perhaps, compared to your neighbors that are still at 35 feet, you've got 10 feet higher. Or that person has to give back 3 feet, maybe, and so it's only 7 feet higher than their neighbors.
So how would you make that happen? I mean, I could see if you sent them to the Board of Adjustment, the Board of Adjustment, my understanding of the code is that they're supposed to provide the minimum variation necessary to mitigate the hardship. And so they could say, we're going to let you elevate your floor, but you've got this peaked roof, and so we're going to require that you drop the roof. If it's just storage space or something, that's not a great... We're imposing a small hardship to alleviate a large hardship. And so I could see them...
I think that's part of their decision.
But then we're going to push everything to the Board of Adjustment.
Well, that's...
Maybe that's the solution. It's just...
Well, the guidance we would give to the Board of Adjustment, Planning Commission would have is that if the building is going to be elevated and it's going to exceed the 35 feet, then it's a 50-50 split. That is, if you got a 4 foot extension, then 2 feet belongs, it's got to be consumed by the owner and two feet will be accommodated by the community. And so you get, instead of 35 feet, you get 37 feet. Or instead of 39 feet, you get 37 feet.
The problem I see with the thought, I guess, is we're getting into every case having to be settled. And what if the settlements are not equal? Are we then looking at lawsuits? In other words, you allow me to keep an extra...
Well, this
point.
Is the Board of Adjustment allows you to...
Okay, the Board of Adjustment allows me to do something. that they don't allow you to do. Now we got problems, I think.
Well, that's up to the applicant and their attorney to present in their case, you know.
But we're not doing anything for the citizens of Dewey Beach.
Well, you're actually hurting them. I mean, right there you just said you got to get an attorney. $2,000, $3,000.
Well, yeah, that's life. If you go before the Board of Adjustment, you bring an attorney.
I know, but it's money that right now they wouldn't have to spend.
Well, I mean, but right now they have to, I mean, right now, if it's not clear if they can go to the Board of Adjustment. I mean, best case, they can go to the Board of Adjustment. Worst case is they can't do anything.
I was looking at a property to go buy a piece of property and doing a different one, a commercial property. And, it, you know, I was thinking about going to the Board of Adjustment. And because of the cost of it, I just didn't buy it. You know, so, you know, it could be a deterrent to economic development. If you're imposing a regulation that is going to cost you because you got to get a Board of Adjustment, you're costing an existing property owner, you know, money.
Right. So since, I mean, I think we're trying to solve something in the zoning code that basically impacts everybody. I mean, Chuck, I like what you said about if somebody is substantially damaged, give them a 35-foot envelope to work with, which is basically pretty much what everybody has. If it's voluntary, you give them 32.
Good idea.
So 32, if, you know, it deals with some of these issues that I want to improve my building, what Marty says, you've got to give something up. So you get to go higher, but... And you get to approach 35 feet maybe, but we're going to cram you down a little on your building envelope. So it's not 35 feet, it's 32 feet, so you give up 3 feet in terms of your building envelope.
Yeah.
If we can see how to implement that, I think that's a good compromise. That's a good, and that's a deterrent to the, you know, people rebuilding their buildings and going up the, you know, I mean, whatever the extreme is, maybe the extreme is 10 feet above 35-foot limit. I don't know what the extreme is, but that might be extreme. So there, you know, that's a significant difference. But if they're giving back at least 3 feet, then it's only 7, so it's not so bad. But at least it's something.
Well, you still have the people who.
You got the people that already are at that level, and they want to substantially improve their property. How do you adjust for that?
Well,
they can't. I mean, it's somebody who's that big, you know, it's hard for somebody with a three-story building to add 50% structural value to their property.
Yeah, I mean,
if they're already built to the max, I mean, there's that. You know, if something happens to those people already built to the max and they got to fix it and they can't comply, that's a hardship. And that's substantial damage, not
substantial improvement.
Well, we're talking substantial damage, right?
Well, he was talking substantial improvement.
You know, there are some old homes that really require a lot of work. So the question is, how would they fit into this? They just have to go to the Board of Adjustment to go back. I hear what you're saying. I'm still at the 35 for living.
You know, to some extent, if you've got a three-story building maxed out on the lot,
I think it just makes it so much easier for people. Not everybody's going to go that high. You're going to run into all these little odds and ends. And if you want people to go to the Board of Adjustment, that's what's going to happen. If that's a collective wisdom, that's fine. I think when the town, and to go back to what you said, Mike, I don't think anybody even thought about flood damage when the town created itself back in 82. I sure as hell, my parents didn't think about it when they bought here before the town was even created. And I think 35 feet was a measurement that they just made sense from grade level. I don't think we'll ever become an ocean city, and I don't think, you know, if the flood level goes up 15 feet, you know, what did I read in the paper the other day? They're talking about sea level rise going up to about 11 feet.
11 feet.
Yeah. Well, this means nothing then.
The ice shelf washing out.
Yeah.
Big drop.
In the Antarctica.
There'll be no Dewey Beach.
Yeah. No, we won't have anything to worry about.
If it goes up 3 feet, you're going to lose that.
That's right. I mean, if flooding hits here, we're not going to have water everywhere. So who's going to be building here anyway?
Yeah.
That's why my sense is keep it simple for people. Everybody understands 35 feet. You're going to go back from one measurement here, a different measurement there. We'll have appeals left and right. I can see the town manager and the building official trying to figure out who gets what and what's, it's going to be, it's not an easy process. Everybody understands with 35 feet, all we're saying is take the measurement from a certain level. And if you don't want to include freeboard in the measurement, that's a different way too.
Well, then we get jammed on not increasing freeboard, which I think we feel is a good thing to do.
Just make it consistent is what I'm saying. Whether it's, you know, and some people do want to substantially improve their smaller properties. And 35 feet, if everybody did it at the same time, then there would be nothing to discuss.
Well, that's not, everybody it's not the same that level. A substantial improvement of the smaller properties is going to approach 35 feet.
Well, right now you don't know. They might do that.
Well, you could take a two-story and make it a three-story. Sure. And that doesn't necessarily approach 35 feet. I guess that's the point. If somebody is going to double the size, which is certainly more than 50%. So Marty and Chuck would say, rather than 35 feet for everybody, if it's a voluntary, that they should give something up. And so 32 feet might be...
32-foot building envelope, yes.
For a building envelope would be a good compromise, and I'm seeing Mike Harmer shake his head. Yes.
I think that's a good compromise. I mean, I like the simple, keep it simple, but I don't know that necessarily that's going to make it through based on what I saw earlier. And, you know, so the compromise being that position, I would support that as a compromise, yes.
I mean, we could provide two options. One is take the base level measurement at FEMA plus the mandatory freeboard, and then give people 32 feet or 35
feet. Voluntary 32, it's storm damage 35.
Well, just damage.
Damage, okay.
35, and then the fallback would be 35 for everybody is a different option.
Because that discourages Mike, that would discourage storm me, you know, saying, hey, I'm not damaged, but hey, guess what? I can go up 10 feet, you know, for, you know, lack of discussion of 7 feet or whatever. You know, I can go higher, now I can see more. That's going to discourage that. It really would, you know, if we did that suggestion that Chuck had. You know, the voluntary people would get squeezed some, so they might not want to do it. It wouldn't be as a, you know.
If somebody has a two-story, 24-foot building today, and they have substantial damage, we're talking. If we give them 35 feet, with plus their extra 4 feet down here, we're looking at. But if they were to replace what they had, they would only be up to, you know, whatever 32 feet or something. In other words.
So Marty, your point is we've been talking substantial damage, and there's really at least. As a single category, and there's really two categories there. One is substantial damage where you rebuild what you have.
Right.
And the other is substantial damage where you rebuild more than you have.
Right. Yeah.
And I think Chuck's notion of 35 feet for somebody with substantial damage was rebuilding what you had.
Yes. Not building to 35 feet just because you have
not taking your 24-foot tall building and raising it 6 feet and adding another story.
Yeah, if your building was already 35 feet, yeah, you'd 35 feet. But if you were only 30 feet to start with, your building envelope's only going to be.
You still have to stay below the. You can go to 35 feet, but you can't go below. You can't go above that with your freeboard and your FEMA requirement.
So the give is, because that then gets us to Marty's point about the give. If you have a building that's got a 36-foot currently, and you're substantially damaged, then you've got to give something back. Because you're go to the Board of Adjustment. But you've got to give something back, which, you know, might be your roof deck or a peaked roof or something, because you only get 35 feet in the building envelope and you've got 36 today.
Other than the hotels, how much stuff do we have that is above 36?
Not a lot. No. I think 2C's is.
I keep mentioning a surf club because you think it's a hotel, it's really not. It's, you know,
Well, condo.
It's condo.
Condo, hotel.
It thinks it's a hotel.
Yes.
All right, we'll call it hotels.
Well, I mean...
But are those structures really going to be raised, or are they going to be storm-proofed?
Well, a commercial structure could be storm-proofed. They're not required to be raised.
Well, the lowest floor has to be stone-proofed. They'll have the lowest floor to be below the base flood elevation, but it has to be stone-proofed and it can't be used for living space. Then your next floor up has to be above the base flood elevation plus the town freeboard.
And the lawyer could probably tell you, I don't think the surf club would be considered commercial because it's actually, kind of, I don't know how you call it. It's fee simple property. The people who own them, they own fee simple. They vote and all that stuff. It's not a hotel where it's run like a hotel, but it's fee simple property.
But the surf club is weird.
I know, but it's 38 feet. It's higher than 35. So it's going to be one of these cases we're talking about. Is what I didn't go out and survey it, but somebody told me it's 38. That guy Dave Thomas was in here talking a long time ago.
But I don't think we're trying to do zoning code for those two buildings.
No. We're just making sure that you don't hurt existing property owners, and they're just one of the anomalies.
Right.
I think that's what I was trying to say. We've got to kind of set a baseline that's fair, but we can't take care of every little individual property. Somebody's not going to fill in.
Right.
Somebody's going to be out of that baseline.
But that's 200 owners.
But it's one structure. But,
well, yeah. 200 and one quarter, each year and a quarter, so...
It's not a small amount of people.
So,
well, really, if it was a 36-foot building to start with, or if it was a 35-foot building to start with, and you end up with substantial damage, and you're going to rebuild back to your same structure, then why cut it off at 35?
Okay.
Rebuild it back to the same structure. Even if that means one more foot, two more feet.
So you're saying if you have substantial damage, you should be able to rebuild
to what you had.
To what you had, regardless of where you go.
So,
as long as you're rebuilding the same thing you had.
For a lot of the Bayside homes are non-conforming, right? Where does this fit into that?
You're dealing with
that. They've got a house of 20 feet. Would they be able to build up to the 32 foot?
Well, are you talking about encroaching buildings or just non-conforming?
I'm just talking non-conforming buildings, and they may not meet any setback requirements that we currently have. How do they fit into all this? They can build to what they had, but can they build higher? That's a non-conforming.
If they do not encroach,
is this as a matter of damage?
Let's say they get flooded out completely.
If it's substantial damage, then they can take it floodplain plus freeboard and up to 32 feet if it's substantial damage, because it wouldn't be any different than new construction.
See, the difference where David was coming from is if they build higher, they're encroaching.
I don't want to talk about encroaching buildings right now. We can talk about non-conforming buildings that don't encroach in the setbacks, but I don't want to talk about encroaching buildings.
Well, if they're non-conforming, chances are they probably are all encroaching in some nature, so I don't know how you can escape not talking about that.
But there's once a subcategory of the other. Not all non-conforming buildings encroach.
No, but I would say if you looked at the Bayside, probably about 70-80% of those encroach.
Well, I don't want to talk about the encroaching issue.
Okay, and don't. Don't talk about it. That doesn't mean I can't talk about it.
I don't want to talk about that now.
Okay, you don't have to talk about it now.
So the ordinance, you originally started the conversation with David, that you're looking for an ordinance to send in January to the January commissioner's meeting. Is that what we're talking about?
I'm looking for a draft ordinance that we would address in our next meeting.
Got it. Okay.
think about where we are right now in the Planning Commission, and we send something up to the commissioners, all this is going to come right back up to the commissioners about some of these details, and the sooner we can provide, fill in some of those things, the easier it's going to be for the next level to go through. Because I tell you, look at how we are with this.
So I sense that everybody is good with taking a measurement from FEMA plus mandatory tree board.
Yes.
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 And I sense that everybody feels that we might want to treat, that everybody feels that we should treat structures that are substantially damaged and are going to rebuild to their same envelope differently than we treat voluntary new construction, substantial improvement, repairing substantially damaged property by adding addition to it.
I'll say yes, but that's a compromise, right? Because I would rather go with Jim's, one size fits all, but it's never going to make it. So the compromise is that we are discouraging the voluntary upward ruining people's views or whatever, you know, their case may be through this compromise. So yes, David, sorry.
I mean, and they can always go to the Board of Adjustment, which they would have to do now anyway. I mean, this is right. Just to create a matter of right,
right.
For people who, you know, a little extra for people who are damaged, not the people, the property. I like Chuck's notion of the voluntary is a 32-foot envelope. If you are substantially damaged, you can build what you currently have. And then we need to define what that means, what substantially
currently have or 35 feet. Now, you know, you need to mention 35 because, you know, some people might have a little cottage, you know, like a one-story rancher, and right. Now they have to elevate to base flood, FEMA base flood plus the 1 foot, and they might want to now build their dream home of the 3 stories.
But that pushes then into substantial
you
improvement.
You got 32 in that case?
32. Oh,
yeah, okay. Right, because that's a voluntary.
A 35 foot vertical building envelope is a generous building envelope. You can easily do a 3-story house there with a deck.
Which you did on 32 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I did on 32 feet.
32 is like the case that you ran, you know, in one of your cases, right? So 32 would work in most cases. We've already proven that, right?
Yeah.
Your base flood plus freeboard plus the 32 is basically the case that you...
Right, and I sent to Mike and a couple of architects this question of, you know, if you were building a house, what would you build? And the numbers did come back. Your point is 32 feet is generous.
35 feet
is very generous.
32 feet is realistic. You can build a 3-story house with high ceilings.
You know, a 10-foot ceiling on the first floor, 9-foot ceiling on the second and third floors, that's 28 feet plus a foot or so between them is 30.
Yeah. Now, you might not be able to accomplish a peak roof if you wanted to do a very stylish type peak roof or whatever. You might not be able to do that in 32 feet. But you would still be able to do 3 floors with, you know, a smaller third floor living space, something like that.
So I sense that are we at a point, if you're substantially damaged and you're just rebuilding what you had, then go to this 0 point and rebuild what you had. 0 point being FEMA plus the mandatory pre-board.
And build to what you have.
And build what you can...
Or go up to 30.
Or new construction, substantial improvements, substantial damage, where you're going to augment. Then you get a 32-foot envelope And that's all pretty simple, and I think people could understand that, and we're done.
I like that.
I can do it. So, but if you're at 35 feet, you can build your 35 foot.
You can build what you have.
Okay, I can live with that.
Now, if you know, you can build what you have.
No higher, but exactly what you have.
No more of a building.
No more of a building envelope. No more of a building envelope.
Vertical envelope.
Whatever from the. So how are we going to define what you currently have?
Well, how does anybody define if they have to go to the Board of Adjustment for a thing?
Well, the Board of Adjustment will tell you that they feel that the code is vague in defining substantially similar.
All right.
And so
here's the issue: vertical, right?
Vertical, well, it's as we've learned with the Brühl case, that once you elevate a building, you might have had a short staircase leading to a door. Once you elevate above 4 or 5 feet, you need to put a landing there.
You're going into non-conforming now. And into setback issues. That's where you're going when you're breaking.
Well, the question is how we need to define, I think we need to define what we mean by substantially similar, or the same building envelope, or substantially similar building envelope, and then worry about some of these perhaps unintended consequences. Would one feel, so there's an X, Y, and a Z, and maybe something else. The distance between, I mean, it's easy for me to think of the vertical building envelope as a distance from the finished surface of the lowest floor to the top of the building, as it's defined in our code, which doesn't include chimneys. And people can, I mean, if we define that, then if people had a peaked roof, they might be able to, you know, increase their
living area,
giving up some of the peaked roof.
Change their roof style.
Or change the roof style. I would be okay with that. So then in terms of the XY dimensions, I mean, would it be
X and Y dimensions should be whatever was there before?
Should it be the projection on the ground of the footprint, or should it be if somebody's got if somebody decided they were going to take this opportunity to move a bedroom from here to here, or maybe they wanted to bump this wall out and would bump this
same,
wall
same
in.
Footprint.
The same footprint.
Same footprint.
Whatever they do to the interior is up to them, but the same footprint.
Same footprint for the exterior.
Now, is that the same footprint for each floor?
Should be.
So each floor would be, I mean, because, you know, you might have a building that was stepped back for the second
that
floor.
That was tiered.
That was tiered, and they said, well, the same footprint, so I'm going to bump this out. And same footprint for each floor. And then if they need to add a landing, I mean, I would say they need to add a landing, and that seems to be...
The position that we've taken in the town has been that you have to provide access to the building, regardless if it goes into a setback or not. People have a right to be able to get into their premises.
I think it's as it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, one could always argue that access would be a central elevator shaft.
They're going to have stairs somewhere.
Well, they're going to have stairs underneath and come up through. Fine. So the same footprint for a habitable area.
Right.
Now, what about decks?
If it extends beyond the footprint of the habitable area?
If there's a
You talking about a rooftop deck or an extension?
I'm talking about second floor. You know, so you've got a tiered second floor. You've got a deck on the second floor. So you now raise it up and...
And decks usually go beyond the footprint, right? Most decks go usually a second. You know, a lot of people add, bump it out eight or 9 feet for a deck. Yeah. I mean, I've seen them all over the place.
It has to honor the setback, the front setback or the side setback.
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, this is an existing building.
And if it had an existing deck, they would be able to build a deck back the same as it was, even if it's elevated.
Right, but what if they wanted to give up some of their habitable space and increase their deck?
I think we're making it too complicated. You don't want to give too many options.
Well, no, but if they maintain their front and side setbacks, they can do it.
Right, again, substantial damage, rebuilding to that same building envelope. How are we defining same building envelope? I could understand where you would not want to have somebody whose second floor is is habitable space and a deck, bumping the habitable space out to enclose the deck, because that's going to encroach on people's views and light and air and privacy and all
that. I don't consider that to be building back to the same envelope.
So what if they were to build a smaller habitable area and a bigger deck?
That would build back what you had.
Okay. Exactly what you had.
Chuck, I think that some people, if once the big flood hit, they might want to take that opportunity to build like Mike built. You know, took his smaller house and did what he could do as far as building, you know, three-story or two-story. I can't see many people, you know, if they had like one of those A-frames or something, you know, building that back, just putting it up 7 feet higher than building an A-frame.
But we're not talking about broaching 35 feet, and if they don't broach 35 feet, they can do anything they want. Mm-hmm. This is only when they're going to, in doing something, they're going to go over 35 feet. Mm. So, and if they want to do something different, they can go to the Board of Adjustment.
But see, now I think now, you know, you kind of are hurting them because the new regulations require base flood plus freeboard, which is higher in some areas. For example, let's use AE elevation 6, right now.
So 32 feet is a building envelope of 32 feet basically is a zero change.
Impact. Because you have your 6 plus 1. Plus 32.
Right.
Is what you're saying. So that'd be
39
feet. And you've proven in your calculations before that the average grade is 3 feet now, right?
Right.
So it's 38. If you do it the old way, it's 3. The old way would be 38.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm good with that. People good with that?
I think, you know, it's good. We could get an ordinance in front of the commissioners. see how far it goes.
Bless you.
Thank you.
It'll give them something to work with, at least.
Well, they always like something, you know, they like to turn over the stones.
Exactly. Yeah.
Any other comments?
So where are we? Are we still 32 and 35 or just 32 flat? Oh, where is...
If you're substantially damaged and would broach 35 feet by being raised to FEMA plus one, you can rebuild what you had.
Rebuild what you had, right.
And broach 35 feet as to whatever extent required to meet FEMA plus mandatory
vertical envelope. Mm-hmm.
That and horizontal. Build what you had
right.
In terms of vertical and footprint of each
right.
floor.
That would put... The example you used earlier in a workshop, Snow Harbor would get there.
They could just, you know, if
raise it up to whatever.
Think about what it is, you know, just jack up the whole building and then fix it.
Mm-hmm. And a substantial improvement would be 32 feet.
Building envelope.
Yeah.
Or new construction.
Or new construction. Or substantial repairs plus. If you've got a one story that's substantially damaged, you raise it up. But that's basically new construction. I think that's simple.
Took a long time to get it. So,
well, you know, that's okay. Okay, the last item is to discuss the amendments to the definitions in Chapter 1. And as you remember, we, in a previous meeting, had consensus on trying to put all of the definitions in one place. And so we will import, I mean, as part of this, my understanding is that we will import all of the definitions in the hopefully soon to be approved Chapter 101 into Chapter 1.
Okay.
I mean, I assume everybody's still okay with that. And any other definitions that happen to be in Chapter 185 are going to also go into here. I got input from Chuck on four items that he had some comments on, and I have, you know me, I don't like anything. I have a lot of things that I don't like about the definitions. So, Chuck, do you have your...
Yeah, I did keep separate notes that maybe I can look through here. One of the things I included is that we should include 185-27 being the definitions.
That, you mean, is that all assigned? 185-27 is all assigned definitions?
Yeah.
Should import those.
Now, on the definition of beach, I guess I wasn't totally clear. Were you removing Rehoboth Bay?
I was...
Was that deleted? Where we're describing beach?
You're including that.
I think we were including it. Yeah, I mean, the problem with the language here is that there are no dunes on the bay side.
Right. Well, there's sort of, I guess. Reed Avenue sort of has something there, a dune. And we've also got a little bit of a...
We don't have a dune line on the bay.
No, but some people refer to that little Reed Avenue. That's
yeah, but that's
dune.
Not
but
the...
I hear you.
So, I mean, we do need a little tweak. I mean... I don't know how you define it's private. I guess it's between the water and the private property, wherever the private property starts. And
then I had an asterisk on page 3 by building height. I think we pretty well covered that today. We had green defined in there, but I think we're pretty well working that over differently. Obviously, that will probably have to be redone.
Well, but we still need, I mean, for the non-flood zone areas, we still need a definition of height that it's going to require either a definition of grade or, well, it's going to need a definition of grade.
Yeah, I need a definition of grade, but if we're talking about the measurement of the height, then we'll also have to include something else as well. Page 6, that's the definition of filling station. I thought this was kind of redundant of a auto service station, which
right.
I put back on page 2.
I thought
that could just be deleted.
So we could delete filling station, which is on page 7 on my copy. But
page 7. Yeah.
And I don't know if I included this in my notes, if you were not, David, but on page 8, the definition of half-story.
Yeah.
You've got two opposing walls directly opposite, not more than 3 feet above the floor. And maybe I'm the only one that's not clear on this, because I might have missed the meeting where you discussed some of this. What about the other two opposing walls? What height can they be?
So, I mean, a general cartoon would be, here's your roof. Mm-hmm. And so a standard, if this is the ceiling rafters for the floor below, and your roof now sits on that top plate. Mm-hmm. Some people would consider that a half story.
Okay, you've got two vertical walls.
Well, in this case, you have zero vertical walls on the sides, and then the ends are triangular shaped.
Just pitched up.
Just pitched. So this actually increases that dimension by allowing two walls opposing each other, and a picture would be good to help here. Clearly, if you make the walls 6.5 feet, then you could have a full, that's a full floor, because you've got a full floor of 6.5 feet. If you make it 3 feet, then depending on the pitch of your roof, you have more or less habitable space under that. And people often add gable roofs, because that increases the habitable space where it's above 6.5 feet. So the idea is that plus the roof, whether it's a high pitch or a low pitch, kind of defines how much habitable space you have under that. The two other walls are going to be shape, whatever that is, you know, triangular at the top and parallel at the bottom of the parallels.
And the parallels are 3 feet.
3 feet or less.
Then you go up your gable.
Or it could be, you know, or zero. And it excludes mansards, which, I mean, in principle, you could have a mansard that was 90% of a floor.
Okay. Just to me, and I'm not sure what to do about it, when I read that definition,
a picture
would
be good.
I can't say that I totally understood it. Yeah, picture might be nice.
I don't like the term, again, wall plates. That's not, it's, I can't think of the term I want to use today. I'm sorry, but it's from where the sill starts, you know, your sill then goes up.
Your bottom sill or your top sill?
It's not gunnel on a boat, you know, gunnel.
But I mean, it
knee wall, that's it.
Yeah.
Knee wall. I prefer putting the term knee wall in there rather than wall plate, and I think it would probably reach a broader spectrum of people who would understand it, because knee wall is a very common term, and even though I couldn't think of it today.
I mean, the idea here is to provide for pitch roofs, which is kind of consistent with the architecture in much of that district, but not have such huge houses. Well, also the pitched roof kind of with gables is a much less imposing structure than a box.
Well, my suggestion is we take out wall plate, put knee wall.
Knee wall. Any other comments?
Page 9. If we were ready to move. Under laundromat, where it has the word for hire. I don't know what I sent to you, David. I just thought there might be a better word. Looking it up in Webster's, dry cleaning machines for hire does work based on Webster's. But I thought maybe there was a better term, and I don't know what it was I sent you.
Yeah.
Because I didn't print it out. I just sent it to you.
Okay, well, I will go back and look at that, yeah.
The ramp for use, I don't know.
I mean, for use by customers on the for use by customers on the premises, I think probably. Well, then you get into the issue of is the laundry facility of a hotel I will look into that. Anybody else?
Swimming pool and gravel pools. I think I'd like to put that in under D on page 1, included as part of the building or structure. We don't have a definition for it.
Someplace else it calls.
It is called
a structure.
Yeah, so if we could just make sure, because you're saying a structure includes building and in-ground pools or swimming pools.
Are you proposing that an in-ground pool becomes part of your building?
I'm just saying it's a structure and it deals with setback issues.
An in-ground pool?
Yeah. We've got it right now.
I would think it's an accessory use.
We define it as, I think it's defined as a structure or a building. If it's less than 18 inches, you can do pretty much anything else. If it's more than 18 inches, it has to meet zoning setback requirements. And that's why I want to put it in just in some place.
Currently on page 15, maybe your page.
My page 16, it says a swimming pool is... any portable pool or permanent structure containing a body of water that is 18 inches or more.
If you're going to use it as structure, then it should be in here, too. Let's put it in there.
It is defined under structure. The definition of structure includes swimming pools.
So under D on page 1, it should include any part of the world building structure. Let's put swimming pools in there as well. It's chapter 1 under D, because my pages are different than
chapter 1 under
D. So swimming pools are included as a structure, and we do define any word that
just want to make sure it's
structures included. Include buildings, and buildings include structures when mentioned in the code.
Yeah.
But fine, we can do that.
If you have a swimming pool and it's considered a structure, then it has to conform to setbacks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Even an inflatable temporary
pool? No, it's got to be an in-ground swimming pools.
Any portable pool.
And above ground would have to also probably...
A portable pool containing water more than 18 inches deep.
Portable pool.
So a portable pool containing water more than 18 inches deep.
That's an inflatable pool. Could be.
If the water's more than 18 inches deep.
And most inflatable pools are. Well, it's a lot of them. So what's the possibility if you have a Kmart inflatable pool?
I think some of those are deeper now than 18 inches.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that are out there.
You have ones with walls, and then they put a plastic liner in it and go to 3 feet.
Then they have to conform to the setbacks.
Yeah, I think that's permanent.
Even though they're temporary or seasonal. I don't see a big problem, but you know. One neighbor complains about the other neighbor.
Well, maybe they have to move if they.
Well, more importantly, you need a 4.5-foot fence around it.
If somebody complains.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to bring it up.
What does that include high tub?
Yeah, it's more than 18 inches.
Thank you.
You need a 4.5-foot fence around it.
Currently, the way the rule is now is swimming pools have to meet the setbacks.
Yes.
There's special provisions for swimming pools.
Okay.
As well as some other auxiliary structures.
But they have to meet the setback requirements of the town.
So the rear yard be 12 feet.
Unless you live with...
No, you can be within... I think in the rear side, you can be up to 5 feet.
Yeah,
from
they
it.
Have accessory setbacks.
Yeah. Okay.
So swimming pools is something we need to look at. I think someplace else we used to talk about kiddie pools. I don't know how you define kiddie pool.
Inflatable, maybe.
That's what I would think of being an inflatable pool. I only bring this up because we had a question about wetlands in the town, and we don't define wetland here. And we do have wetland areas, and in particular, we've put up a sign, the town's put up a sign for no trespassing over at the Bayard Avenue pumping area. We put up, it's a protected wetland area, and we don't want people trespassing behind there. We've had so much litter and trash thrown back there, and they're destroying the little dune. So maybe we ought to put down a wetland definition.
You got to be careful what you do there, because wetlands is described by federal government and DENREG. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're going to change or modify their description, then it could...
We wouldn't want to modify. We want to adopt their...
Purpose. Well, then you've got to make sure that what you're calling wetlands is a wetland under their description.
No, we know it is. We've double-checked that.
Okay.
I have one more on page 14. That was under the boat trail.
Says
it is a trailer used solely for transport. And I've seen a lot of things carried on boat trailers and on vessels.
Yeah.
So I would suggest we use the word primarily.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Okay. I thought a lot of these were either had typos or were awkward, and I will volunteer to try to deal with that before we get to this the next time, if you all are okay with some wordsmithing and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at eatery.
At what?
Eatery. On my page 6, now, the whole structure here, if you look at it, sub-items A through G were recommended to be deleted when this was gone through the last time. And the reason for that is it was felt that these are the requirements of an eatery, not really the definition of an eatery. And there are a number of places where this same thing happens.
I think that makes a good point.
And it struck me that we don't currently, I believe 185 doesn't currently define an eatery. That was done in the definitions.
So you're saying in 185.
So 185.
Eateries aren't even mentioned?
Well, no, it's a 185, 25. D1 is restaurants and other uses, and it gives a bunch of stuff. Restaurants provided that, a bunch of stuff. And then sub 4 under that is eateries or cabarets. So if we delete this stuff from the definition, we probably have to stick it back in 185.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. My preference is to regulate in the zoning code 185 right, and defined in the definitions. I mean, proposal.
Well, that was what we thought in 2008, but we never got around to putting it back into 185. So I will address that as well. The flood zones on the next page, I think it would make sense to. So we have coastal high hazard, general floodplain, areas of shallow flooding, to also put in AEAOVE, well, not necessarily in that order, with the FEMA definitions for these things. Just to...
That's a good idea.
The next page has under home occupations, and the there's a bunch of kind of regulations that, I mean, do we want to keep this? Do we want to throw this away? Do we want to?
I thought I saw somewhere where you covered that other. There's a whole list of occupations, dentists and things like that are listed.
Well, that's professionals. That's in table one. Or maybe it's in table three. It's probably in table three.
I think we'll keep it in there.
Why is home occupation in there? Is there something in the code that says in this district you're allowed to have a home occupation?
I suspect so. I suspect in the residential district you're allowed to have a home occupation. Okay. Thank you.
As long as, and then you qualify, I think you can't have...
You can't have any employees.
Commercial vehicles there and all that.
And you can't, probably can't have signage either. But,
and the proprietor has to be the resident.
Pre-resident.
You can't sell stuff out of your, like, you can't have people coming to your house and buying, you know,
right.
buying a bunch of stuff from you.
Right.
So. But those are 185, I think. I was looking through it last night. I can't remember where it was.
Oh, yeah, it's in table one under permitted accessory uses. It's a home occupation in the main building. So again, we have hotels. the same issue with hotels and motels. There's a bunch of regulations. And Mike, you would say stick the regulations in 185 and keep the definition here.
Yep, that's why I don't have any comment on it because I think they were on the right track doing what they did. Unless anyone disagrees.
Can we just go back to home occupation for a minute? Got my attention. It says occupying more members of the occupying family. Would that be better as to say the owners of the, in other words, they have to own the property? Because if you rent it out, you could rent it out to a family, and that family could have 8 people in it, 10 people in it, and that all of a sudden becomes a home occupation. Whereas if you do belong, if it is for the owners of the property, the owners have to, in other words, the owners have to occupy the house and it be their business.
I'm thinking if you have a, go ahead, Mike.
Well, that only because I see that in other places, and they allow, it's a special use or an exception, whatever. They allow people to have a small business in their house, say a lawyer or an accountant, if him and his wife are running the business, and maybe they have one employee comes. So they're allowed, the owners of the business and one employee, and they live there. They own that house, and they live there. That's their home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's their home. They want to work out of their home, have a small little business. Signage is limited, parking's limited, but they're allowed to work out of their house. But if you leave it open to a family and all the family members, then you could import a bunch of people and say, that's my family. And all of a sudden now you're increasing the use or the volume that goes in and out of that house. And it's really not the owner.
Well, I guess that you have motivated me to think a little more about this. I didn't flag family, but if I were to rent your house.
Right.
Should I not be able to be a dressmaker? So I'm not a family and I don't own the property, but I have a 5-year lease.
Well, you could be a dressmaker, but you don't run a business out of it. In other words, you don't accept deliveries there, and you don't have people coming into your house for
a mail order catalog
for measurements
and stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, you could have people coming in and out of doors for fittings and whatnot, and you would increase the volume of traffic in there.
Right, but I mean, you said an owner, and I'm not an owner, and you said this says a family, and I'm not a family.
Then I would discourage home occupation under that, because You're renting your house out to somebody to live there and run a business. And the benefit of giving somebody who owns a house and lives there the right to work out of their house is you allow them to work out of their house. You don't allow that person who owns that house to convert it into a small little business.
Why don't we just leave it the way it is? What was wrong with it?
I don't see a problem with it. I understand what you're saying, but I also don't see a problem. I don't think we have a big issue with home occupations in Dewey Beach. But if somebody, just like you're saying, if somebody comes down here and rents a place and they want to repair surfboards, should they not be able to repair a surfboard as a part-time business while they're renting down here for the entire summer?
Probably not. That would violate the intent of a home occupation. A home occupation is you live
in
your home.
It's incidental to living there.
You live in your home, and you don't want to get in your car and drive 5 miles or 10 miles or 15 miles to open up your door to be an accountant or whatever. You just want to run it out of your house. That violates, the thought of what a home occupation really is. If you live there and you want to be a dressmaker, you can, but you're limited to your signage and traffic.
Well, there shall be no display material on the premises, no outside storage.
Well, I think it should be limited to the owner of the home, and the owner of the home and his family, or their family, whatever the gender.
Or whoever has got the long-term lease around.
There seems to...
I like the way it's written myself.
Yeah, family.
Yes. The way it's written now. Yeah.
Family. Chuck, you would say...
Family.
Family. Yeah. Family. Family.
Well, who's
but not necessarily family? Owner.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not a good one. Owner.
Owner Don.
Owner.
Owner.
Family.
So we're 1, 2, 3, 4. Marty.
Huh? Owner.
So it's 3 to 4. We will have two options. That's a policy decision.
If you want to restrict the use of what an owner wants to rent his house out to somebody else, this is a good way to do it.
It's renting a residence.
You can have a long-term lease with somebody. If for a family, and if they want to do dressmaking or they want to do this, are you saying they can't do that?
But when they're running a business.
Renter living
next
no, they want to do it incidental to living
an
there.
Living next
they
to
want
you.
It incidental to living there.
Dave, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Can
yes,
I just
Georgia.
Make one quick comment?
Sure.
I just find this interesting because since I moved from Baltimore 19 years ago, I have rented the properties I've lived in. I have a business license as Leon Hart Communications. And I operate out of a home office, yet I am a tenant in my home. I rent a house, and that's what I do. So what you're suggesting would prevent me from being able to have that home office that's recognized by the state of Delaware that gave me my business license because they want money.
That's separate.
That's recognized by the IRS.
That's separate.
I know, but I'm saying you would prohibit someone in Dewey from renting me a home to be able to have a home office in which I did freelance writing as a business.
If it wasn't zoned commercial, if it wasn't zoned for the type of business you're running, then yes.
Then you're unemployed, right?
No, you go out.
I'm just making the point.
You go out and rent space in a commercial or professional building that houses what you're doing.
Well, typically when someone rents a property, and I can say my properties are a little costly that I rent, but typically when someone rents a home, they step into the shoes of the homeowner in terms of possession and use and right of use of that property. I'm just wanted to bring that up, but you guys do whatever you want to do. I'm done.
Follow what George just said. I mean, you're basically saying that they're really not a family at that point when they rent that house. That's what you're saying.
What I'm saying is it should say the owners of the house can have a, somehow word says that the owners of the house who live there can run a business out of there. Because that's why home occupations was brought into planning and zoning, to allow people, the homeowners who live in their house, they don't have to go out and travel, they don't have to
rent space. I understand your logic.
Because if you can go ahead and rent it out to somebody.
I would say that homeownership applies to the renter as well.
Okay, well,
we've got a 4-3 split.
We can suggest, I mean, this is a recommendation, and we can recommend two options.
Yeah, measures with that.
Yeah. Okay. Be sure you're there to make the argument.
I mean, I think.
Fortunately, at this moment, I do not live in Dooley.
So I think in D.C., some home occupation uses are granted to owners, and some, like I think, medical professions. If you're a doctor, you have to be the owner. But if some of the others, you don't have to be the owner.
Well, you know, that's the point. Maybe the word professional use. But some of them are limited to professional uses. You can only have an occupation in your house if it's a professional use. In other words, you can't repair engines in the backyard.
I don't know.
I don't know. It depends where you live.
So page 15 on my copy under story. It says, for the purpose of determining the number of stories, the following shall apply. And then it says, if the elevation of the bottoms of the first floor joists is more than 6 feet above grade, the space underneath shall be considered a story. And 6 feet doesn't seem like it's... or if the space... having a clearance of 6 feet or more under a roof suitable for living quarters shall be considered a story. And this might have been fine when it was written in whenever it was written, 83. But since then, the definition of habitable space and stuff has increased. And I think we should, our code currently defines the parking spaces, I think, 6.5 feet high, and I think we should, I would suggest we increase 6 feet to something like 7 feet or 7.5 feet or... What's the IBC on ceiling heights now in habitable space? Is it 7 feet?
Seven feet.
So we should at least increase it to the IBC definition of a habitable story.
I'm okay with that.
So what are you putting in?
I'm going to look up to see what the IBC says, and I'll put in 7 feet or whatever. If the IBC is higher, I'll put in what the IBC says, because...
That's a good idea.
Maybe we should just adopt the IBC code for it.
What does this do for the FEMA plus freeboard of 8 feet? Does that now become short?
It can't be habitable space.
Okay. I guess that's what I'm looking for, is something that...
I will look through all of this again.
I'm just looking for something that identifies the first story as being habitable space, as opposed to saying I can't do 32 feet because I can only go three stories.
Well, it says the surface of any floor and the surface of the floor above it. So there's in principle no surface but I will look into that.
I mean, it might be okay as it is. I just feel like maybe there's something missing.
I will. So I will try to address these issues and come back with a new draft for our next meeting. Yes, sir.
It occurred to me.
Your name, please. Hmm? Your name for the record.
Oh, Phil Michael. Do you want to include a definition for a utility trailer? I say that because my deed has restrictions in it. That I can't have pigs in that house or a trailer. And I've got a utility trailer.
I don't even know what a utility trailer is.
For carrying junk around. It's an extra use for a boat trailer.
Yeah.
I got a couple of them in my yard.
Yeah, something you might carry lawnmowers in or anything. You know, it's a utility trailer. U-Haul.
So it's something you pull with your truck, but does it have tags?
Yes, it's a tag.
I think that's... there is something in the code about storing... Is that a, does that become a registered vehicle? I mean, that
some
might
some
become
some
a registered vehicle.
It has to be registered if it's tagged.
It's, so it's a registered vehicle. And
it
so
come
it's
under the motor vehicle.
Does it in Delaware?
Well,
I think they are tagged, yeah.
And the reason I ask is because in Maryland, if you're under 4,000 pounds, you can tag it without registration.
Well, how do you get the tag?
You go ahead and make application for the tag, and they give you the tag, but they don't actually... I'm sorry, I'm saying this wrong. It is registered.
But it's not tagged.
But there's no title.
Okay.
That's what they don't do. They don't issue a title.
Right.
So I stand.
But you go to DMV, don't you, to get it?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Is there any comment from the public?
Yeah.
No comment from the commissioners. All in favor?
Do we have a meeting date?
We do, and it's I would say January 17th. At 10 o'clock, I believe.
Let me see what we got.
Is that not right?
That's a Saturday.
January 17th, 10 a.m.
There you go.